endless men whose age will be not to defend some ancient creed, but to live out the laws of Christ in every thought and word and deed. God send us men alert and quick, His lofty precepts to translate, until the laws of Christ become the laws and habits of the state.
Welcome to God Send Us Men Ministries with evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart. We challenge you to open your Bible and follow along with today's message. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. To contact us or read and listen to more teachings online for free, visit GodSendUsMen.com. And now, here is evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart.
It's not what I wanted. It's not something I understand. My circumstances seem so confusing. I'm placing it all in your hands. Your ways are I want mountains to move. You want me to climb. So I'm gonna trust your work, your will in your time. Your ways are higher than
your way. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the message this morning. I spoke with Paul some this week, and he gave me a really great report on his health condition, and he asked me to thank those of you who have been praying for him. As you know, he's recovering from a stroke, and at one point he thought he was near death, but he's now doing very well, and that's a great report, and I'd ask you to continue prayer for him. Please continue prayer for Frank, for Linda, for our brother with kidney issues, and continue praying for Joanna's brother-in-law. Now, for some reason, I was under the impression that he had been found, but that's not the case. He still hasn't been found. They do have reason to believe that he's alive, but as at the preparation for this message, he has still not been found. So please continue prayers on his and Joanna and their family's behalf. I want to say to you again some things about last week's message. And first and foremost, I want to remind you that I was not then, nor have I ever, spoken down to or tried to discourage anyone from seeking and finding and using and teaching the true name of the God of the Bible, His Son, or any other Bible characters for that matter. I was simply trying to get us to understand that if we make claim that the way we say certain names, whether they are attempts at saying His name or whether they are in the usage of His titles, ultimately, we do not know exactly the sound that Moses heard when our king told Moses his name. And to think that we know what that was, we just aren't thinking that through. And did I have some mocking in my voice last week? Well, yes, I did. And make no mistake at what that was about. That was directed at the Jews. As always, it's directed at the Christ-hating Jews and to those who are aligned with the Christ-hating Jews. Torah. Roll the R. You know, maybe put a hawk sound at the end. Okay, who said that's how those words are to be pronounced? Well, that's how the Jews pronounce it. So do we go to a synagogue to learn how it pleases the God of the Bible to hear His name pronounced? Okay, well, I'm not going anywhere near a Jewish synagogue. And to believe that the Jews have one shred of truth regarding the God of the Bible, the Israel of the Bible, is to miss one of the most fundamental understandings of the Bible. The Jews murdered Christ. The Jews murdered the prophets. They are not of God, have never been of God, and they are, just like Christ said, of their father, the devil. Before we get started this morning, if we get started this morning, turn to John chapter 8. And let's read, please, beginning with verse 1. Jesus went unto the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and the Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery, and when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what sayest thou? Well, first of all, is that true? Is it even true that in the law God gave Moses adultery was a capital offense? Well, Leviticus 20, Deuteronomy 22, the answer is yes. It is a capital offense. And before people want to use John chapter 8 as a way to twist the words of Christ into believing that He changed the law, that Jesus now paved the way for everyone to have a field day with adultery, that is not at all what Jesus did in this chapter. But of course, that is what the world has done, led by, quote, churchian preachers. They use this chapter and the words of Christ against Him and against His Father's law. And as we'll see, as we progress through this chapter, it is the Jews and those who believe like the Jews who will twist the words of Christ and actually use His own words against Him in order to further their own agenda. Verse 6. This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. Okay, Jesus knew who he was dealing with. He knew what they were up to. Okay, just like we can today. Not because we're clairvoyant, not because we have the, we do not have the ability to read their minds, but you know, that's not totally accurate. Of course we can read their minds. When we understand the type of individual that we're dealing with, typically we know their mindset. We know what they think about things. For instance, when we're dealing with someone who is pro-man's, quote, government, we already know what they think about a lot of, okay, if not most of the issues that men face today. And that is, many times, that, quote, government is the go-to source for everything. And when you're dealing with someone like that, a lot of times, we know what they're going to say before they even say it. And because Jesus knew the mindset of the scribes and Pharisees of his day, he knew that all they were trying to do was, as the text says, tempt him so they would have a reason to accuse him. All right, verse 7. But Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground as though he heard them not. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground, and they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest even unto the last, and Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself, and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Jesus was not saying that he changed the laws of God. Jesus was not memorializing this as a witness to future generations to say that it was now perfectly fine to commit adultery and get away with it. That is not at all what's being said here. According to the law of God, it takes witnesses to condemn someone. This isn't very difficult to understand. It takes witnesses. Out of the mouth of two or more witnesses. Now, keep your finger here and turn to Deuteronomy chapter 19 and read beginning with verse 15. I think it's interesting that these scribes and Pharisees wanted to use the law of Moses against this woman, but they didn't even know what the law of Moses was. Now, this is verse 15, Deuteronomy chapter 19. One witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin in any sin that he sinneth at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. If a false witness rise up against any man to testify against him that which is wrong, then both the men between whom the controversy is shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges, which shall be in those days, and the judges shall make diligent inquisition. And behold, if the witness be a false witness, and hath testified falsely against his brother, then ye shall do unto him as he had thought to have done unto his brother, so shalt thou put the evil away from among you. And those which remain shall hear and fear, and shall henceforth commit no more any such evil among you. And thine eye shall not pity, but life shall go for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Now, when I first read this a few minutes ago in preparation for the message, I didn't catch something. You know, he spent more time dealing with the false witnesses and the penalty for false witness. He spent more time dealing with that than he did in the fact that one witness is not acceptable. It has to be at the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three. I think that's very interesting. The following information that I want to read to you is from the Equal Justice Initiative. Now, only God knows whether or not this information is totally accurate or not. I mean, it could be completely inaccurate. I don't think so. But I'd be inclined to believe that it's more trustworthy than not. What? Why? Because the injustice system of the U.S. threw out the laws of God, the principles of God, a long, long time ago. And when you do that, you've started yourself down a path of complete and total failure. And when the mindset is that man's, quote, laws are better than God's, that is a recipe for disaster, and that is exactly where the U.S. is today. Quote, wrongful convictions. Thousands of people have been wrongly convicted across the country in a system defined by an official indifference to innocence and error. 3,175 plus exonerations since 1989 in the National Registry of Exonerations. 375 people exonerated through DNA evidence since 1989. Now, let me say something about this. And you might just think that I'm crazier than ever, and that's okay. But I do not believe in DNA evidence. I do not believe in fingerprint evidence, and I don't believe that all guns that are fired have unique barrel markings, like they say all people have uniquely different fingerprints. I think all of that is what they call junk science. And they've put people in prison without any witnesses. Okay, I've seen stories of them putting people in prison for murder when there wasn't even a body found. Okay, I believe all these things that they have come up with are attacks against the laws of God. They are blatant, overt actions to try to show the world that they're smarter than God. And if they are smarter than God, well, then maybe the God of the Bible is just a myth. Okay? And it was God that said, it's not Charlie that said, God said, one witness shall not rise up against a man for any iniquity or for any sin, in any sin that he sinneth. At the mouth of two witnesses or at the mouth of three witnesses shall the matter be established. Have you ever heard them talk about how unreliable eyewitnesses are? Well, of course they do. And certainly there is some truth to that. I get that. Especially when you live in a world that they've created for themselves that centers around McDonald's and football. Okay? But I would certainly expect the world to rail against eyewitnesses, because God said that's how judgments are to be made. And that's also why God said it takes more than one witness. Two and three is even better. And that's also why God put into his law that false witnesses would be dealt the same punishment as what the accused would be getting if he was found guilty. And when they rail on the credibility of eyewitnesses, and as I said, some of that, maybe even most of it, is probably true, but it's a symptom. And it happens because the people who have their faith and have placed their trust in a, quote, government that has abandoned the laws of God are going to end up with a land where the cries of the innocent rise up. They have created themselves a world of injustice. That's what happens when the laws of God are abandoned. When they're, quote, juries, which isn't even biblical to begin with, okay, unless you said your juries were made up of godly Christian leaders and godly Christian judges, a jury of your peers is not even in the Bible. Jury of your peers? I mean, really, here's the definition of peer. An equal, one of the same rank, a man may be familiar with his peers. An equal in excellence or endowments. In song, he never had his peer. A companion, a fellow, an associate. Okay? I think that because of the way they use juries, which isn't even done according to their own definitions, but because the eyewitness rules that they use do not also include the biblical judgments according to false witness, then naturally, because they disregard the most foundational tenet of the law of God concerning the judgment of sin, it's just like dominoes that fall. This falls, then that falls, then this falls. And in the end, it's just a big mess of fallen, failing pieces. This is what happens when men refuse the law of God. God said, and in the end, they'll actually become insane. Just like we're reading here today, they destroy lives, they put people in prison, they even kill people, and they do it sometimes without ever even having a single witness. Let's go back to that article, quote, 27,200 plus years exonerated people spent in prison for crimes they did not commit. 44%, only 44% of the 95 conviction integrity units in the U.S. have recorded exonerations. Almost half. There are more innocent people in our jails and prisons today than ever before. End quote. Now, I read that as it says it in the article. But I want to reiterate for those who are true Christians that they are not our jails and prisons. They are their jails and prisons. When I was talking to Paul this week, he made the statement about us, true Christians, being judged because of the wickedness around us. And I said to him, in which he totally agreed, that while yes, the Bible does say it rains on the just and on the unjust, for those who are trying to come out from among them and be separate, we need to remind ourselves that we serve a merciful, kind, forgiving God who loves his children and wants good things for them and not bad things. Yes, we haven't found the perfect way out. We haven't found the complete way of separation, but we have been given forgiveness, and there is now therefore no condemnation to them which are in Christ Jesus, those who have given their lives to following Christ, those who are trying to live according to his kingship. So it's not our jails and prisons. It's not our government that's doing all these things. And that's why I've constantly tried to remind those who call themselves Christians not to fall into those words of condemnation. Jesus said a man is condemned by his words. And when referring to the U.S. or Missouri or any other man-made, quote, government, Christians should never refer to them as, quote, our government. We have chosen another king. We've chosen another government. It's the Isaiah 9 government that is God's government, where his son, Jesus the Christ, is the king. The article continues, quote, the rate of exonerations continues to rise, revealing an unreliable system of criminal justice, end quote. Well, of course it's unreliable. It abandoned the laws of God, the principles of God. It abandoned them a long, long time ago. In Ted Weiland's book, Bible versus the U.S. Constitution, in chapter 17, he deals with the Constitution's outlawing of what it calls, quote, cruel and unusual punishment. Which, when you see what's going on today, and you hear about people who admit to the sin of murder, and there are eyewitnesses to go along with their admission of guilt, and you read about the heinousness of what they did, and then you find out that they were spared the death penalty, and you just shake your head and wonder, what does it take in their system for the death penalty to be carried out on a murderer? Well, let me say this again. I've said it before. In their world, it's probably a good idea that they're not so quick to carry out a death sentence, because when your system stands in open defiance to the laws of God, you're probably going to be killing a lot of innocent people. Now, from the same website that I'm quoting this morning, there's a headline from the fall of 2024, just a few months ago. Missouri executes Marcellus Williams despite prosecutors' opposition. And the link is in the notes. Now, this is a persecutor now, not some, quote, shady defense lawyer. But one of their persecutors is the one who petitioned Missouri not to execute this man because, quote, A lot of physical evidence was collected at the crime scene, including the murder weapon, a kitchen knife, bloody shoe prints and fingerprints, and hairs on the victim's t-shirt, her hands, and the floor that did not match her or her husband, and none of it can be tied to Mr. Williams, the prosecutor wrote. Mr. Williams was excluded as the source of the fingerprints and hairs, the fingerprints and male DNA that was recently discovered from the knife handle, end quote. Now that's odd, isn't it? They claim that all this DNA evidence is so reliable, nearly infallible, and they use it to convict people. But when it exonerates people, well, then maybe it's not so reliable. The article continues. With no direct evidence linking Mr. Williams to the crime, the state's case depended on two unreliable witnesses. A jailhouse informant who claimed that Mr. Williams confessed to him, and Mr. Williams' girlfriend who claimed she saw Mr. Williams with the victim's laptop. Both implicated Mr. Williams because they wanted reward money and shorter sentences in their own cases, Mr. Williams' counsel told the Washington Post. New evidence further undermined the witness's credibility, prosecutors wrote. Sworn statements from his own family state that the jailhouse informant made up the story about Mr. Williams to get the reward money, and evidence emerged that Mr. Williams had gotten the laptop from his girlfriend, who had her own financial and personal motives to implicate him. Quote within the quote, this never-before-considered evidence, when paired with the relative paucity of other credible evidence supporting guilt, as well as additional considerations of ineffective assistance of counsel and racial discrimination in jury selection, trying to throw it all in there, the prosecuting attorney's office wrote, casts inexorable doubt on Mr. Williams' conviction and sentence, end quote. And in spite of this, Missouri killed the man anyway. It's amazing how that works. Now, let's go back to the original article. And of course, I found many more similar to this. Just not going to take time to go through them all. You can find them for yourself easily. A lack of accountability for police and prosecutors, reliance on junk science and mistaken eyewitnesses, and the indigent defense crisis are major contributors to wrongful convictions that have undermined the credibility of our system and ruined the lives of innocent men and women. EJI challenges wrongful convictions and exposes the unjust incarceration of innocent people that undermines the reliability of even the most serious crimes. Causes. Exonerations tell us a lot about what causes wrongful convictions. Diane Jones. Diane Jones spent 6 years in prison after being sentenced to life imprisonment without parole for a crime she didn't commit. More than half of wrongful convictions can be traced to witnesses who lied in court or made false accusations. In 2018, a record number of exonerations involved misconduct by government officials. Other leading causes of wrongful convictions include mistaken eyewitness identifications, false or misleading forensic science, and jailhouse informants. End quote. Of course, again, the laws of God have been abandoned. I searched the internet for this. How many cases of perjury are prosecuted? And this is what came back. While perjury, lying under oath, is a serious offense, prosecutions for perjury are relatively rare. End quote. Well, yes. But according to the laws of God, it is so serious that the punishment is the same for the one who gets caught lying as is the punishment for the one on trial. If the trial is for murder and the death penalty is the result of being found guilty, if someone gets caught lying in a death penalty case, their punishment is death. But when this law of God is abandoned, then lying is going to be the obvious result. Here's a more detailed explanation. Perjury is a felony. In the United States, perjury is considered a felony under federal law with potential penalties including prison time of up to 5 years. End quote. Up to 5 years? That is not what God said. And friends, this is about as clear as can be. This is a direct sticking your fist in the face of God and saying, we don't care what your law says, our way is better. And we wonder why the U.S. is in the shape it's in. When judges and persecutors and cops openly admit, we don't follow the laws of God, we follow our, quote, laws, which is what was said to me to my face in their courts. That article continues, or that answer continues. Difficult to prove. Prosecuting perjury cases can be challenging because it requires proving that someone deliberately made a false statement under oath, knowing it was false, and that the statement was material to the case, end quote. Well, that makes it just about impossible, doesn't it? But that's not what God said. God said a false witness who lies is guilty. There's no way to accurately determine what's in someone's heart concerning the lie. Okay, that's where godly men with godly discernment come in. Parents know when their children are lying, okay, and most people can tell when other people are lying. Are we to believe that U.S., quote, judges are incapable of knowing when people are lying? Again, amazing how that works. It continues, rarely prosecuted. Despite the severity of the crime, perjury is often called the forgotten offense because it is not only widespread, but rarely prosecuted. Threat of perjury charges. The threat of perjury charges is often used by lawyers to ensure witnesses provide truthful testimony, end quote. Well, how can they even prosecute perjury when lying, when their Supreme Court has said it's perfectly fine for their agents to lie? Quote, in answering the question, are cops allowed to lie? Here's the answer. Yes, police officers are legally allowed to lie during interrogations and investigations to gather information and evidence as long as they don't use coercion or violence. Here's a more detailed explanation. Legal basis. The Supreme Court case, Frazier v. Cupp, 1969, established that police deception, including lying, during interrogations does not automatically render a confession inadmissible in court. Examples of deception. Police can lie about the evidence they have, the results of forensic tests, what witnesses have said, or even the seriousness of the crime. Limits to deception. While police can lie, they cannot use physical threats of violence to obtain a confession. Importance of rights. It's crucial to remember that you have the right to remain silent and the right to an attorney during police questioning. Consequences of lying. Lying to a police officer during an investigation can complicate legal proceedings and may lead to additional charges, but it's generally illegal to lie to federal agents, including police officers, end quote. Well, of course, they can lie to you, but you can't lie to them. Okay, that's a little odd. Excuse me. And again, it's amazing how that works. They lie all the time. So it's obvious the need to say that it's okay to lie. And that's what they've done, which is another way they have stuck their fist in the face of God and said, we don't care what your laws say. We don't care if you said, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not lie. We say it's okay. And people wonder why the world that they've created for themselves is the way it is. The original article continues. Faulty forensics also lead to wrongful convictions. Many forensic techniques aren't scientifically validated. These junk science techniques include hair microscopy, bite mark comparisons, firearm tool mark analysis, shoe print comparisons. Innocent people have been convicted because forensic lab workers made errors in testing, testified inaccurately about their results, or fabricated results. In 2015, EJI won the exoneration and release of Anthony Ray Hinton, who spent 30 years on Alabama's death row after being wrongfully convicted of capital murder based on a faulty bullet match, and Benaiah Dandridge, who spent 20 years in prison after being wrongfully convicted based on an erroneous fingerprint match. Inadequate lawyers can cause wrongful convictions too. Overworked and underfunded defense lawyers lack the resources to vigorously test the prosecution's evidence at trial, and people who are wrongly convicted and imprisoned have no right to counsel after their cases are affirmed on direct appeal. African Americans are burdened by a presumption of guilt that most defense lawyers are not prepared to overcome. For sake of time, I'm going to skip through that part. Children and people with mental disabilities are especially vulnerable to being wrongly convicted. EJI won the release of Diane Tucker, a woman with intellectual disability who was wrongfully convicted of murdering an infant, by obtaining medical evidence that proved the baby never even existed. Official indifference. A major factor in wrongful convictions is official indifference to innocence and error. Walter McMillian. Official misconduct and racial bias led to Mr. McMillian's wrongful conviction and death sentence. Counties, states, and the federal government all have different rules and policies about preserving evidence and providing access to testing that could prove an incarcerated person's innocence. Even when incarcerated people manage to get evidence that proves their innocence, police and prosecutors often refuse to re-examine the evidence or reopen the case. Police, prosecutors, and judges are not held accountable for misconduct that leads to wrongful convictions, such as fabricating evidence, presenting false testimony, or refusing to consider proof of innocence. Immunity laws protect them from liability even in cases of gross misconduct. Prosecutors can't be held liable for falsifying evidence, coercing witnesses, presenting false testimony, withholding evidence, or introducing illegally seized evidence at trial. Some prosecutors have set up conviction integrity units, also known as conviction review units, a section of the prosecutor's office that seeks to prevent, identify, and remedy false conviction. Unlike teams assigned to review individual cases or a series of questionable convictions, CIUs are designed to operate indefinitely and have a dedicated staff. Only 95 CIUs are operating at mid-year 2022 out of more than 2,300 prosecutors' offices nationwide. And while CIUs, alone or in cooperation with other groups, helped secure 60% of exonerations reported in 2021, their impact varies dramatically. Of currently operating CIUs, 53 have not produced a single recorded exoneration, end quote. Well, this is what happens to people who refuse to live according to the laws of God. This is the result of the, quote, preachers in the U.S. who have sold the bill of goods that God's laws have been done away with, that God's laws are bad, that man's laws are good, that God's law failed. It wasn't good enough. It didn't work. So man had to come up with something better. And I can't even believe that men could actually let something like that come out of their mouth. But not only do men do it every single day, but men who claim to believe in the God of the Bible, men who claim that Jesus was the Son of God, men who claim that they're Christians, will teach others to believe that God's law isn't any good and man's laws are what God says people are supposed to live their lives by. This is one of the most incredible concepts I've ever heard in my life. Now, Jesus did not legalize adultery. Jesus simply demanded the enforcement of the laws of God concerning witnesses. And when there are none to be found, the accused was set free. Now, this woman may have actually been caught in adultery. Now, and I believe we can't really say because her accusers were known liars. But it seems as though fundamentally in the judgment that Christ made on the situation that it was worse that there were no witnesses against her than the possibility that she had actually been caught in adultery. It isn't that Jesus excused adultery. It's that fundamentally the accusation could not proceed because there were no witnesses against her. And this was a call, a demand to return to the law of God, just like we're talking about today. And this is what we mean when we talk about a return to the laws of God concerning how government is supposed to function. excuse me, we're not talking about a return to the Mosaic law as in their ceremonies. We're not talking about a return to the Mosaic law concerning rolling the R's and hawking at the end of certain words. We're talking about whose law, capital L, or whose law, small L, are you going to live by? Friends, this is why Revelation chapter 20 is so important. Is the government of God for today? Are men and women, boys and girls, required to choose the government, the kingdom of God? Or are they supposed to live according to some, quote, loosed Satan for a season? Because that's the plan of God. Okay, and this now brings me to a huge point. I think I need to go back for just a few minutes. I've heard this all my life. It's an excuse for obeying and submitting to the heathen gods, the laws, the statutes, ordinances, rules, regulations, constitutions of the U.S. and their states. I want you to turn back to Jeremiah chapter 27. When we were reading this a few weeks ago, I should have camped on this passage for a while, but I just thought maybe a different time would be more appropriate. But I can't get this out of my mind. So we need to go back and look at it again. Now, I will tell you that the people that I have encountered, and I've encountered lots of them, who say things like, excuse me, well, we're in Babylon, and we have to obey all their rules. We're in slavery, so we have to obey the masters. Okay, and they use that as an excuse to disobey the laws of God and live like heathens. Now, I've never heard them go to Jeremiah chapter 27 as their source for that belief. Okay, now, we read the whole chapter a couple weeks ago. Let's begin reading in verse 8 today. This is what God told Jeremiah to say to Israel. And it shall come to pass that the nation and kingdom which will not serve the same Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and that will not put their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, that nation will I punish, saith the Lord, with the sword, and with the famine, and with the pestilence, until I consume them by his hand. Therefore, hearken not ye to your prophets, nor to your diviners, nor to your dreamers, nor to your enchanters, nor to your sorcerers, which speak unto you, saying, you shall not serve the king of Babylon. For they prophesy a lie unto you, to remove you far from your land, and that I should drive you out, and ye should perish, because they're telling you not to serve the king of Babylon. But the nations that bring their neck under the yoke of the king of Babylon, and serve him, those will I let remain still in their land, saith the Lord, and they shall till it and dwell therein. I spake also to Zedekiah king of Judah according to all these words, saying, bring your necks under the yoke of the king of Babylon, and serve him and his people, and live. Why will ye die, thou and thy people, by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence? As the Lord has spoken against the nation that will not serve the king of Babylon. Therefore hearken not unto the words of the prophets that speak unto you, saying, ye shall not serve the king of Babylon, for they prophesy a lie unto you. For I have not sent them, saith the Lord, yet they prophesy a lie in my name, that I might drive you out, and that ye might perish, ye and the prophets that prophesy unto you. Also I speak to the priests and to all this people, saying, thus saith the Lord, hearken not to the words of your prophets that prophesy unto you, saying, behold, the vessel of the Lord's house shall now shortly be brought again from Babylon, for they prophesy a lie unto you. Hearken not unto them, serve the king of Babylon, and live. Wherefore should this city be laid waste? Do you see what's going on here? Yes, God said all the nations were to bring themselves under the yoke of Nebuchadnezzar. Well, of course they were. Why not? Turn to Daniel chapter 2, and let's read beginning in verse 1. And in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams, wherewith his spirit was troubled, and his sleep brake from him. Then the king demanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, The thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, ye shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered again and said, Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation of it. The king answered and said, I know of certainty that you would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you. For you have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me, till the time be changed. Therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that ye can show me the interpretation thereof. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, There is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore there is no king, lord, nor ruler that asks such things at any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. And it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king, except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. For this cause the king was angry and very furious, and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain, and they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, Why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time, and he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Friends, those who are followers of Thomas Paine and the anti-faith, anti-Paul deception, don't fall for their lies when they condemn Paul for Paul supposedly saying that he received direct revelation from God. Pretty much every single Bible character that we read about spoke of direct revelation from God. Here we're reading one right here. Now verse 20. Daniel answered and said, Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his, and he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me what we now desired of thee, for thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, Destroy not the wise men of Babylon, Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said thus unto him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, Art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen, and the interpretation thereof? Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, The secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers, show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets, and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came into thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. The image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Friends, who was the stone? Oh, my word. Who is the stone? It's talking about, he saw Christ. He saw the kingdom of God. He saw the government of God. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain, and filled the whole earth. We're talking about what Christ said about himself. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, and the fowls of the heaven, that he hath given into thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all, thou art this head of gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, forasmuch as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things. And as iron that breaketh all these things shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms. It shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Do you question why God wanted all nations to be under the yoke of Nebuchadnezzar? It's because the future kingdom, government of God, of Christ, of heaven was shown to Nebuchadnezzar. The prophecy of Christ being the stone cut out of the mountain and breaking to pieces and consuming all the world's kingdoms was first revealed in Babylon. The prophecy concerning the events that took place in Revelation chapter 11, where the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord, and He shall reign forever. That's the dream that God had Daniel reveal to Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. It shall consume the kingdoms of the world. That's Christ taking back their authority, taking them all and claiming them for Himself, meaning that all men and women, boys and girls, are to submit themselves to the only God-ordained king and government allowed to exist. And now verse 46. Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel, and commanded that they should offer oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, Of a truth it is, that your God is a God of gods, and a Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. Notice there also that the name of this God, not even mentioned, but his title certainly was. Nebuchadnezzar didn't know his name, but he certainly knew who he was. Then the king made Daniel a great man, and gave him many gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king that he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. And then, because Nebuchadnezzar had put away his godless representatives of his, quote, government, and installed Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who then eventually installed the laws of God in Babylon, turn over to chapter 3, and let's read more about what Nebuchadnezzar said. Verse 28. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Now chapter 4 and verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages, the people that God said earlier, all the nations are supposed to yield to Nebuchadnezzar. They're supposed to submit to Nebuchadnezzar. And why? Because of what's going on right here. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house, and flourishing in my palace. Now go to the end of the chapter, verse 34. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing, and he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven, and among the inhabitants of the earth, and none can stay his hand, or say unto him, What doest thou? At the same time my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lord sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride, he is able to abase. Of course, by all means submit to Nebuchadnezzar's yoke. The future kingdom / government of God was first revealed there. And Nebuchadnezzar proclaimed that the God of heaven over all is over all, and his laws and judgments were truth. They were the greatest. They were above all. And Nebuchadnezzar was one of the greatest examples to the world of what happens when men believe their ways are higher than God's. And then when they come to their senses and understand that it's the God of the Bible, it's His laws, it's His ways, it's His judgments that are supposed to be the supreme laws of the land. Well, friends, I'm out of time for today, and we'll plan to pick up right back here in John 8 next week and then get back to Revelation chapter 20.
You've been listening to God Send Us Men Ministries with evangelist and missionary to America, Charlie Stewart. To contact us or to read and listen to more teachings online for free, visit GodSendUsMen.com.